Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So, as you've been hearing, as if it was the only thing going on in the world except Anthony Weiner, it's headed for 100 degrees outside, especially if you're inland in New Jersey. 90 even at the shore today, which is really rare. Let's just say Anthony Weiner won't be the only one sweating today. If you need a cooling center in New York City, call 311. If you're in a car, I hope your AC is working. And don't forget to refresh the coolant. Don't let that be your radiator spewing by the side of the road. My fellow runners, I recommend taking the day off. You know, the ozone may be even worse for you than the heat. And if you're just staying inside, looking for non-strenuous activity, here's something you can do. Help redesign the New York ballot. Why that? Well, if you voted on New York's new paper ballots last fall, anywhere in New York State, you may be one of the 30% who found the ballot design confusing or hard to read, according to a League of Women Voters survey. In a close election, this could become a big problem. As I said before the news, don't forget Bush versus Gore. Don't get complacent about ballot design. Right now, an unresolved problem in New York State with these confusing new paper ballots and machines. We have two guests to start us off today who are trying to do something about it, and we will introduce a WNYC crowdsourcing project in which you can help to redesign the New York State ballot. Assemblyman Brian Kavanaugh is here, a Democrat from Manhattan, who introduces a bill today to unconfuse the ballot. He's on Newshook. And Larry Norden, Deputy Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, which remains very involved in keeping this issue front and center and now has a specific set of redesign suggestions of their own. So welcome both of you back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brent.
And listeners, here's how you can play along on our politics website. Go to itsafreecountry.org. Our news director, John Keefe, who's kind of a design geek and kind of a democracy geek, good combination for news director. He has posted his latest annotated, or he has written up a description of the Brennan Center's annotated ballot. And you can see this example of one way to make the ballot better and suggest your own at itsafreecountry.org. Assemblyman, you're introducing a bill later today. Thanks for giving us a little exclusive first. What's your bill?
It's my pleasure. Thank you, and thank you for having us and dealing with this very important topic. We have in New York gone through what I think is fair to say a very rough transition from the old lever machines that many people were comfortable with, but had some serious issues of their own, to paper ballots with optical scanners. And in my role as a chair of the subcommittee in the assembly that addresses election operations issues and voting rights, I've been very active in trying to identify what is left to be done to make sure that that process works as smoothly as possible for voters. And one of the biggest concerns we've gotten from people is the ballot itself. People have tremendous difficulty reading it. They have tremendous difficulty understanding what's on it and even reading the words on it. And so we have a bill that basically takes many of the provisions of election law that were written in the time of those lever machines and updates them and modernizes them so that the election administrators can design ballots that work for people, that are usable, that reflect the most current wisdom about how to design complicated documents so that ordinary people can use them effectively.
And listeners, again, you can go to itsfreecountry.org and look at the example of an annotated ballot from the Brennan Center showing what's bad with the current ballot design, what could be better in their opinion as an example of change. And if you have anything to say about this, you can call us on the air, of course, at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And why is this important? Let me just do a little refresher of the Bush versus Gore Florida debacle in 2000. You know, obviously a lot of you know this, but some of you don't. They had the confusing butterfly ballot design in which it appeared that thousands of people who meant to vote for Gore actually voted for third-party candidate Pat Buchanan. Now, that issue wasn't even part of the recount battle that went to the Supreme Court because those votes technically were clearly cast. They weren't vaguely cast like the hanging chads that were the source of the legal dispute. but I'm convinced they were mistakes and actually threw the election to Bush. So the potential consequences of a confusing ballot design are vast, right, Larry?
They are, Brian. And in fact, a lot of people don't realize this, but even since the 2000 election, the Brennan Center came out with a report in 2010 about this. There have been at least a dozen contests where ballot design impacted the outcome of the election. Not because of a butterfly ballot. We don't do that anymore. But there are all kinds of other design mistakes that we make that end up having an impact on election and actually changing what should have been the result, what the voters intended to have as the result of the election.
So let's go down some specific suggestions for making this ballot clear and voter-friendly on the annotated ballot that we have on the site. It's freecountry.org. Number one, candidates' names in all capital letters,
right,
which I guess we had last fall, is bad.
It's bad. And actually, one thing I want to say about all of this is there's actually a science to this. What's up on your website and on the Brennan Center's website is the product of cooperation between Design for Democracy, which has set the national standards for ballot design, the Usability Professionals Association, which does testing around the country on ballots, and the Brennan Center, which has also spent a lot of time studying this. One of the most basic things is that all caps, and this may be counterintuitive to people, but this definitely shows up through testing, all caps, all capital letters, is difficult for people to read. They end up just skipping it. It's hard to see. Having mixed case makes it easy to distinguish between the letters and easier to read, I should say. Although this is the law, there was actually a bit of an issue in New York City because New York City didn't follow this in the last election. It would have been impossible for them. Another thing all caps does is it takes up a lot of space.
Uh-huh.
And so they didn't actually follow the law. So, I mean, this has got to be changed just because counties all around the country, all around the state are violating it because it's too difficult to do.
That's really interesting. And another one, you don't like the party symbols on the
right
ballot, like the Democratic donkey and the Republican elephant.
Yeah, I mean, basically what this comes down to, and a lot of people had this complaint in the last election, there's a lot of clutter in the ballot, and it makes it very difficult. Everything gets shrunk down. It makes it difficult to see the things that are important, the candidate name, the party name, what contest they're voting in. And when you throw in things like these symbols, which frankly, I don't – you know, maybe in 1910 when they wrote this law, people knew that the symbol for the Democrats was a star and that the symbol for the Republicans was a little eagle. But
Oh, I'm looking at it now. It is a star for the Democratic Party. See, I've been voting in New York State for how long, and I never realized this. And for the Republicans, it's the eagle. It's not the donkey and the elephant.
That's right. So we're not even using symbols that people might recognize. So in any case,
what's that symbol for the rent is too damn high party?
Yeah, I don't actually know what it is.
perhaps the only symbol that might be recognizable,
right,
is the anti-prohibition party, which has a pointed leaf that many might recognize.
One that might have been helpful. But otherwise, I don't think they are particularly helpful. And in any case, not only are they not helpful, but where they're placed right now on the ballot, it just adds clutter. It makes it more difficult to see the things that are important to voters.
I went to graduate school at Ohio State, and students had a lot of stuff with the Buckeye Leaf logo.
Right.
But if you didn't know.
Got it.
All right, another one. There is a graphic of a finger. It's a little black drawn finger pointing to each party line on the ballot.
Right. And I think – I'm not sure where that came from. My guess is that comes from the lever machines. And in some sense, that might work for lever machines. I think people saw the finger and they understood that they had to use their finger to move that little switch on the lever machine. It doesn't make any sense on the paper ballot. And again, it just takes up a lot of space, clutters. It's more difficult to read the party names. Not necessary.
And the back of the ballot has voting instructions and propositions or ballot questions to vote on. At least it did in the fall. You have a problem with that?
Yeah, I have a couple. This is probably the biggest area where we could improve the ballots. First of all, and again, this has been shown to be true in a number of studies. If you're going to have instructions and you want people to actually look at them, they should be immediately before the action. People aren't going to turn over the ballot to read the instructions and then go back. And if they are, they might forget what's there. So we'd like to have the instructions, where possible, to be immediately before the action that they're referring to. But secondly, these instructions are terrible. They're not in English, basically. They're, or if translated to Spanish or Chinese and Korean, they're not in plain language in those languages either. They're written in legalese. They're all kinds of terms that most people aren't going to understand. And I'll give you one example. And we suggested a change for this language. Instruction number 7, and there are a ridiculous number of instructions for the basic thing about how to vote. Instruction number 7 right now says, if you tear or deface or wrongly mark this ballot, return it and obtain another. A much easier way of saying that would be, if you make a mistake, ask for a new ballot, right? And again, that's tested very well. This is all the product of fairly extensive testing. People understand that new language that we're proposing, and actually will do that when they make a mistake.
We're talking about New York's confusing ballot design on the new paper ballots and how to improve it with Larry Norden, who was just speaking from the Brennan Center for Justice, and Assemblyman Brian Kavanaugh of Manhattan, who is introducing a bill to this effect today. So, Assemblyman, would your bill specify any of these design elements that Larry was just talking about, that they be made by law?
Right. It's a combination of removing requirements that are unhelpful. So, for example, that pointed finger with the name of the party printed within the arm of the that is attached to the finger is actually a legal requirement at the moment. Hmm. And the instructions, there's literally a full page, single spaced of instructions that are required to be on every ballot by law, and actually the text of those instructions is specified by law. So removing that and putting some simpler instruction language in the law will be helpful. And just more generally encouraging the right uniformity of fonts, the eliminating the all cap requirement that Larry mentioned, and it'll mandate some of the key better provisions. It'll eliminate some provisions that we think are unhelpful and tie the hands of people who are trying to design sensible ballots. And then it'll encourage the state board to put out a sample ballot that really works for everybody around the state.
And if I could just jump in quickly on that, one of the things that I think this bill does very well is it also allows for more flexibility. And one of the problems that we saw just in this last election in New York City was the instructions didn't match what the ballot actually looked like. I think the issue was that the instruction said, vote in the oval. I don't remember exactly. I think it said vote in the oval below the name of the candidate, when the oval was actually above. And the city board said, that's what the instructions require. And what Brian's bill does is it gives a little bit more flexibility to election officials. So if there's something crazy like that, they don't feel like we don't have any choice. The law says we have to do this even if it doesn't make any sense to voters.
That was the butterfly ballot problem in Florida, right? The thing that you actually filled in for which candidate you were voting for or punched out.
Right.
It was unclear whether it was the one nearer to Gore's name or nearer to Pat Buchanan's name. Frank in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
Hi. After the 2000 election brouhaha, people joked that maybe the United Nations should monitor United States elections. As it turns out, we don't qualify for that because we don't have uniform voting standards. I say, why not go back to pencil and paper? It works. Accurate. I think that the time involved, the little bit extra time involved in counting, looks to me worth it. It works in England, and I think we should do it here.
Frank, thank you. But isn't that the irony here, Assemblyman, that in effect with this optical scan system, yes, one piece of it is the machine, the optical scanner, but the problems that we're discussing today are with a paper ballot that you fill in with a pen. And so it's going to the most old-fashioned technology where these problems have arisen, the issue just being that the piece of paper has to be designed well.
Right. And it has to be designed by standards of law. It also has to be designed to work with the machine. So I don't want to underestimate the complexity of making this transition for the election officials. They had a lot to do in a short time. and they did the best they could. But we've learned from that experience now. And what we're trying to do is create a ballot that really works for people. With regard to the caller's question, one of the advantages of this system over the old system is that there is paper that can be retained after the election. So if you have a problem, you can review it. Having machines scan and count that paper so you can have actual counts on election night is a valuable thing as well. So we think that this system could, at the end of the day, be really the optimal system for running our elections. But we obviously need to have a lot of work to do to get the details right.
So before we go, Larry Norden from the Brennan Center, how can listeners contribute to this process through our website if they want to take a crack at a piece of ballot design themselves?
I would encourage them to do so. You know, they should provide comments on what they think works and what hasn't worked, or what they think doesn't work on the current ballot, what works and doesn't work with the suggestions that we've made. You know, the Brennan Center always encourages public contributions to the legislative process. I can't think of any area where it's more important than the ballot. This is what citizens use to make their voice heard. And so nobody knows better than the voters themselves about what will make it easiest for them to make their voice heard. So no question that they should be providing comments on what they think works and doesn't on these ballots.
All right. So, listeners, you can contribute your ballot clarification ideas and see the annotated ballot example. It's up there at itsafreecountry.org. And we have a minute left. So, Assemblyman, just a real quick question or two on other things in the news. The governor's new proposal for public employees to save the state on rising pension costs raised the minimum retirement age to 65 from 62 for state workers. It's 57 for teachers now, and it would go all the way up to 65. Also, base pension only on base pay, not on, you know, a lot of puffy numbers of retirement hour, of overtime hours that they could take in the last few years. Do you support this?
Well, I would say that just obviously the issue of making sure pensions are going to cover the costs that they need to cost to make sure people have secure retirement is important. And obviously there are major fiscal issues that the state and localities need to address. One thing that we've done in New York well, and this governor has done well, is not make the unions the enemy and cut them out of that process, but have a negotiated discussion with them to figure out what is best. And I think that's what's going to go forward. And I think, you know, I think there is some room for improvement on this.
Is this going to get passed in the next week before the session ends in Albany?
I think it's unlikely that we will actually enact this in the next – I mean, the session ends 10 days from today. I think it's unlikely we will actually enact this. We will have ample opportunity for the remainder of the year to work this out. We have many issues that are rising to the top right now, including – I would just, if I may make a plug, rent regulation in New York City for 2.5 million people expires next Wednesday, and we really need to address that. So we're working very hard on that and many other issues.
You're going to get same-sex marriage in this session in the next 10 days? Are you counting heads? I know the Assembly will pass it.
As a member of the Assembly, I've voted for it 3 times. I'm happy to do it again. I'm not perhaps in the best position to judge what a handful of Republican senators are going to do on that issue.
There were some Democratic senators there, too, side last time.
Yeah, there are a few. Some of them are no longer in office, and there are a few. But, yes, we need 6 or so votes.
State Assemblyman Brian Kavanaugh, Democrat from Manhattan. Larry Norden, Deputy Director of the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. Again, listeners, you can go and see and contribute to this annotated ballot at itsfreecountry.org. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. When we come back, we're going to take phone calls from teachers on this 100-degree forecast day on how you teach on a day like this. What do you actually do in the classroom? Some public schools have air conditioning. A lot of public schools don't have air conditioning. New York City public schools happen to be out today. Some other public schools are dismissing early for the heat. What do you do, teachers, on a day like this? Call us now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Teachers in your prep rooms, teachers who happen to be off today, 212-433-9692. How do you teach on a 100-degree day?